welcome to another exciting and jam-packed episode of Modern Day Philosophers with me, your host, Danny Lobel, and thank you for joining me. I'm feeling a bit better. Still having some neck and back pain, but going to the chiropractor twice a week, doing some physical therapy stuff, getting back on my feet, getting excited about stuff coming up. Oh, the stuff coming up. Oh, there's always good stuff coming up. Working towards my recording of my second album, which will hopefully take place in November, in a very special place. I can't tell you yet, but I'm working on the details. Once it's finalized, tell you everything. There you go. Okay, so that's what's going on there. I'm working on my recovery from my car. Had a bit of a car accident last you heard from me, and what else can I tell you? I don't know. I'm just in a good mood today. I'm full of life today. I'm feeling happy. I'm feeling positive. I'm feeling optimistic. It's the season finale of Modern Day Philosophers, season 5. We've come a long way. It's been a good ride, and I got to know a lot of you along the way, and I hope to get to know a lot more of you as we go on. Email me at thecomical@yahoo.com. Say hello. I have a painting of Sidney Bechet that I owe a few of you who made a donation, and this is your last chance to get in on it. I made a painting. I painted it. I did it all myself. I should be done with it by the end of the week and sending out prints. I'm making a limited number of prints. If you want one, make a donation to the show of $30 or more by going to moderndayphilosophers.net. I can't believe we're going into season 6 already. I never can believe anything, it seems. Whenever it comes to this show, I'm just amazed because there's nobody forcing me to do this. I'm doing it. I'm forcing myself to do this, and that, for me, is a personal achievement. It's a lot of self-discipline that I never used to have, and I'm on top of myself to make this happen, and nobody else is telling me, you have to get this done, Danny. It's remarkable to me that I'm continuing to do this. So, good for me. Thanks, me. No problem, you. We should hang out more often. So, now let's get to our advertiser. You know him, you love him. It's Stand Up Records. Listen to this!
You know, here at Stand Up Records, when we say we have the best names in comedy, we're not messing around. In fact, we were there first, with comedians who went on to become household names. Names like Hannibal Buress, Maria Bamford, the Sklar Brothers, Doug Stanhope, Mark Maron, and Lewis Black. So why not head on over to standuprecords.com or amazon.com or the iTunes Music Store and pick up a classic CD, DVD, or download of the best comedians working today. And check out some of our other artists, because you never know who the next big thing will be. That's standuprecords.com.
There you go, everybody. That's Stand Up Records ad. And I'm slipping into my Scottish self already. I don't know why. It's just that time of day. Maybe it's because once my voice goes a wee bit hoarse, I turn Scottish. I don't know why that is. But I feel more comfortable doing intros alone in a room when I'm doing it as a Scottish person. I'm not so great at talking about things on my own. There's nobody to correspond with. I know you're out there, I know you'll hear this, but it just makes it a bit more comfortable for some reason to do it as me Scottish self. All right. boy. Okay. Here's what we got going on. Season 1 is no longer available on iTunes and SoundCloud because I'm trying to make a little money here, folks. Why not? Everybody else in the world has to. It's how we survive. So, there's a site called ConnectPal. You go to connectpal.com/moderndayphilosophers, and you can get the entire season 1 with never before seen by you photographs of me and the guests, ones that never made it to the website. And not only that, but if you sign up, it's $4.99 a month, as the suits over at ConnectPal say, it's the price of a cup of coffee, for crying out loud. What do you think? These people don't want to pay for the price of a cup of coffee. Anyway, it's the price of a cup of coffee. $4.99 a month. And you can get the entire season 1. You get the exclusive photographs. And you will also get Alex Vosella, the man, the myth, the legend, who picks out the philosophers for Modern Day Philosophers, will be going through every episode one by one from the very beginning, giving his analysis on where we hit it right and wrong on the philosophy, and expounding upon the philosophy and reviewing the episodes so you can revisit them all over again with video from Alex Vosella on every episode. He's releasing one a week. There's already one up there. There might be another one up there I haven't checked today. But by the time you listen to this, there probably will be a second one up there. And on top of that, there will be even more exclusive content. I will be showing you video from my life here, doing some quick videos with Kylie, putting them up, just giving you more for the $4.99 a month. All right? Not too bad. And on top of that, you get the entire season one. If you've heard it already and you want to go back and get it again, it's there. If you haven't heard it, oh, you got to hear it. Oh, you got to hear it. It's got a lot of great people on it. Maria Bamford, Janine Garofalo, Ari Shaffir, Rick Shapiro, Matt Kirshen. I mean, it's a lot. Rick Overton. I can list the whole, Fred Stoller, Katie Olsen. So much going on. By the way, check out what's going on with Katie Olsen. Do a quick Google search. KATYOLSON. Oh, boy, it's good stuff. She's on just about every TV show this week in what they call a media storm. A media storm. Go check it out for yourself. All right. Great. Now, let's get... Oh, Dwayne Perkins, another great guest from season one coming to mind. Zach Sherwin. I might have even listed them all yet, but if I didn't, you got to go and listen to them. I'm going to start the show. Gilbert Gottfried and I, we had a lot of fun. Hear for yourself right after the intro song. Enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Modern Day Philosophers.
Modern Day Philosophers.
Having failed to pay attention in school, Danny Lobel, now older and wiser, will attempt to learn basic philosophy 101. Our young hero will be joined by today's top comedians, philosophers all their own. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Danny Lobel.
Modern Day Philosophers.
How you doing? How you feeling?
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah. 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 Okay.
Only okay.
I ad libbed that okay.
That was good. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm quick on my feet.
I can tell. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay.
Okay. So, yes. So how does that compare to normal? Are you normally better than okay or worse?
No. Okay is one of those non-descript answers.
Yeah.
Nobody really cares when they ask how you're doing. It's kind of like whenever I ask how someone's doing, and they'll go, well, I got back from the doctor. I've got about 2 days to live, and my last hours will be extremely painful. I'll go, yeah, okay. I really didn't care about hearing any of this. I just wanted an okay.
Maybe we're needing a better question, you know. Maybe how you doing is a dishonest question to begin with.
Yeah, it's like, how you doing? Well, my family was killed by a serial killer. I just discovered their bodies this morning. All right, that's great. That's really great. I'm glad to hear it.
So what are we really asking when you say, are you okay? What is it? It's just a talk to me.
Yeah, right? Just talk to me. Yeah. I think it actually means... Most of the time, it means don't talk to me. Like if you meet someone in the elevator or something, it's like, hey, how you doing? You know, it's like that means don't really talk to me. You can nod your head and go, great, great. Yeah, you could be bleeding and go, great.
I wonder how that would work as an don't talk to me as an intro, but very politely with a smile.
Yeah, don't talk to me because honestly, I don't care if you live or die. Yeah, that should be a more honest approach.
Do you get a lot of people approaching you, I assume, because of your celebrity? It'd be strangers coming up to you a lot? Is that a...
Yeah. It's funny. I grew up watching all these cable shows where I thought these were made up cable stories, and they would, but they're all true. And I experience them now, like where they'll go like, didn't you used to be Gilbert Gottfried? Which I thought when I'd heard stories like that on talk shows, it was bullshit and they made it up. The other one was, hey, you know who you are? And the other one is, hey, are you Gilbert Gottfried? Yes. No, you're not. So all these stories that I thought were total bullshit turn out to be true.
And you're in New York. You grew up here in New York. When you talk about growing up, you're a Brooklyn kid, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What part of Brooklyn did you grow up in?
I was born in Coney Island. then Crown Heights, then Borough Park.
You were born in three places?
Yeah, I was born in three places. It was a difficult birth. Yeah. Yeah, I really feel sorry for my mother because I was born in three different parts of Brooklyn.
So... Yeah, that's a strong mother. She kept having you.
Yeah, see, people were stronger in those days.
She didn't choose to abort it by number three.
Yeah,
she,
yeah, it's like, you know, and it wasn't like nowadays with the painkillers and everything. No, it was all the way.
They must have really wanted you. That's kind of a testament.
Yes. I went through three different neighborhoods being born.
Were you born Christian one of the three times?
Yes. Yes, I was born Christian, blonde-haired, quite muscular, and sharp features.
That was time number two.
Yes. And I was a great tennis player and was very good at building things.
Wow.
Excellent in sports.
That must have been quite a few years there.
Yeah, I was a Swedish farmhand.
Okay, great. Swedish farmhand.
Yeah, unfortunately, in the last birth, I came out a sniveling Jew. So that...
And that's where they stopped.
Yeah,
that's the funny thing.
I wanted to stay with the Swedish part. Would have been a lot easier life.
They didn't put you back in again and see if you come out Swedish again the fourth time. I guess there's no need for a farmhand in Coney Island.
Yes.
There's more of a demand for a sniveling Jew.
Yes.
I like sniveling.
Sometimes if you look in the classified section, it'll go looking for a sniveling Jew who types.
And there's all these sniveling Jews that are like so close, never learned to type, but so close.
Sniveling Jew experience not necessary.
So I'm gonna try and bring it. So did you grow up? Do you have family, brothers, sisters, or
I have two older sisters.
Wow, so you're youngest of all girl family.
Yes.
What do they do, the sisters?
One of them's a photographer, and the other was a teacher.
Was a teacher as in retired?
Yeah, retired.
Okay. And what about your folks? What'd they do?
My father had a hardware store in Coney Island, which I don't know if I've ever seen anyone ever go into it in the time I was there.
Yeah.
What I remember about my father, and I talked about it in my book, Rubber Balls and Liquor, that you can get on GilbertGottfried.com.
Go get it.
Yeah. And he had like one model airplane there, cheap model airplane, that these local kids... There was some law passed that in order to buy glue, because these kids would get stoned sniffing modeling glue. And so in order to buy the glue, you had to buy a model with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he would sell this model, they'd buy the glue, and then they'd just toss the model in the garbage. And then he would go out. I would like count to three, go out, take the model, put it back in the store.
Resell it.
So he made 100% profit for a while.
Never had to restock
that. And then one day, some asshole kid actually bought the model, and that killed the whole business.
That shut him down.
Yes. What an asshole that kid was. That killed. We didn't get presents that year. I used to build those monster models.
Monster models? Tell me what that
is. Yeah, those were... Oh, they had all the Universal monsters. Like, there was the Frankenstein model, Dracula, the Wolfman, the Mummy.
And you used to, how do you build them? You just put them.
Yeah, they came in like, you know, just like airplanes. They came in pieces and you put them together and painted them. And
what was it that you liked about it? Was it an artistic thing or?
Well, I don't know. I was in love with old monster movies.
Yeah.
So, because years ago they used to have all these old movies on TV that I would watch. And now it's like you got to look for them on the movie channel or whatever. Back then, it was like regular channels. You'd have three channels, and they'd have old gangster movies, monster movies, even silent movies.
They don't really do monster movies too much anymore now. And when they do, they don't feel very monster-y, you know?
No.
They try to make the vampires romantic.
I've given up on vampires now. Yeah.
They've gone a whole different way with that monster.
The vampires, it seems like there's always a homosexual undertone to all the vampires. And it seems like Transylvania 90210. It's basically...
Yeah, they killed the undead for you.
Yeah, and I used to like... Like, I remember, like, the old George Romero Night of the Living Dead movies I used to like. And now it's, like, too many zombies already. Like, enough with it.
They went nuts with zombies. Everything is zombies.
Oh, awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a Jew, I say, enough with the zombies. Another zombie. Enough with the zombies.
Frankenstein has no presence anymore. That's disappeared. So maybe that's the one that's still got some purity left to it.
Maybe. Unless they bring back some romantic teenage Frankenstein.
Hard to make Frankenstein romantic.
Yes.
It's already green. His flesh has already turned color.
Now here's another thing that makes me angry, is that they always make, when they paint pictures of Frankenstein, or they always make him green.
Mm-hmm.
And in actuality, he should be like a gray color, like a corpse color, whatever that is, like white.
Like a gray almost.
Yeah, like a gray. And I think where it started is in the old movies. This is someone who's so pathetic that they know this. In those old Universal horror movies, the makeup was green because in black and white film, green would come out as gray.
Mm. It's all a mishap based on bad film technology.
Yes.
So in the process, Frankenstein got recolored because of no color.
Yes.
Maybe that's the thing. We got to bring back gray Frankenstein.
And I interviewed, because I have a podcast also. Everyone has a podcast. This is what's so weird nowadays. People with podcasts interview other people with podcasts.
Right.
Like, I'll do your podcast, you do my podcast. But on my podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, I interviewed Boris Karloff's daughter and Bela Lugosi Jr.'s son.
Mm-hmm. Tell me who they are. I'm not sure.
Okay. Boris Karloff played the Frankenstein monster and the mummy, as well as a billion mad scientists back in the 30s and 40s. Bela Lugosi was most famous as Dracula.
So you spoke to the kids of these these monsters.
And by kids, they're like in their 90s.
They look like monsters themselves.
Yes,
now.
Exactly.
So did they know much about their parents' careers? Did they have a lot to say?
See, this is something I always realize whenever I've met sons and daughters of famous people, I always realize I know more about their parents than they do. Because I actually was fans and would see their movies. They're like, I don't know. He died when I was two.
Do they get a kick out of the fact that you know, though?
I guess so. And it's like they're going, I think he liked crackers, but I don't know. I saw crackers in the house once when I was a kid, or maybe someone left them there.
Come to think of it, I think it was his buddy Joe.
Yeah, yes. We had a next door neighbor, Joe, who I know for a fact liked crackers.
Now let me tell you about Joe.
Yeah. He wore a sweater.
I think you're right about the podcast, though. Basically, we're getting to a point where I think you're not going to even, it won't bother you. People won't bother to have a conversation unless there's a microphone on in
front
of them.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. And it is. It's like every single person has a podcast. And that's what I find. I'll go on their podcast. They go on my podcast. And I don't understand the business anymore.
Yeah, it's like you said. Otherwise, you know, you can use the greeting, don't talk to me.
Yes. That's much better.
Yeah. Hey, don't talk to me. You got a microphone? All right. Yeah. We'll sit down and talk. I didn't get to ask you, do you like when people come up to you? Is it bothersome or do you enjoy it?
You know what it's like? You ever like sitting on the bus or the train? And there's an empty seat next to you. And someone gets on the train or the bus. And you think, oh, God, don't sit down next to me. Don't sit down next to me. And then they walk right past you. And they don't sit down next to you. And you go, why the hell didn't that guy sit down next to me? What's wrong with me? What did I do wrong? What, do I smell? Do I look funny? Why didn't he sit? God damn it. He should be sitting next to me. And that's the way I feel walking down the street. If sometimes I'll see a group of people and I'll go, oh, God, they're all going to be running over, wanting my picture, wanting my autograph. This is going to be so annoying. And then I walk right past them and I go, why didn't any, no one, hey, you know who I am? Sometimes the worst is when I'm at an airport or out in the street, and you'll see, like, one time I was walking past a park, and out of the bushes jumped a whole group of paparazzi with those giant cameras, and one of them go, oh, we were hiding out here for Jennifer Aniston. We heard footsteps. And another time I was walking down the street, like on Lower Broadway, and a group of paparazzi were like running, really like a stampede with those enormous Canon-sized camera lenses.
Yeah.
And in like just a couple of seconds, all these thoughts went through my mind. Number one, I got scared, all them running at me, like they were going to just trample me. And two, I got angry that my privacy was being invaded just because I'm a star and I can't even have a nice walk down the street. There was the other part that just accepted it, saying, well, I'm a big star. This is part of the payment. And then they all ran past me because Liv Schreiber was walking, and no one even noticed me. They just all, I could feel the wind that as they were running past me.
That's great. I love all the thoughts that went through your head leading up to that moment.
Yes.
That was, you know, I think I can relate to that, not in terms of paparazzi or
yes.
something. But I'm often building up things that aren't there.
Oh, know? Yes.
Your imagination can be so powerful. You can psych yourself out for things that don't even exist.
That's so much of my lifetime is like that, where I'm going like, I could get like a pair of socks and I'll be thinking, I enough. I kind of like the gray Sox or the brown Sox. And then you go with the brown. And then, of course, I'm thinking about kind of the gray ones did look good. And then I'll be thinking like how in the future somewhere I'm going to need gray Sox. And like it'll be this party.
Yeah.
That and they're like at the Playboy Mansion or something, and I'll go, there'll be loads of playmates ready to have sex with you, but you gotta have those gray socks.
I love that scene where you got these gorgeous girls coming up to you and say, lift your pants.
Yeah, quick. Yeah, let's see what socks you wear.
Let's see what you got under there.
Or I'll go meet with the president, and I'll go, now remember, anyone wearing anything but gray socks is a terrorist, so shoot them on sight.
And then you got two Secret Service guys taking a look and saying, well, no, I think those are more charcoal.
Yes.
Well, I can't be too quick to shoot them.
So, boy, I think ahead in the future, like where I'll be like 120, mm-hmm. and what I'll be doing and what mistakes I'm making.
What's interesting to me is also that you're in New York, you're from New York, and you've been through this whole series of different lives in New York. You know, you were a regular guy in New York, you're a super famous guy in New York, you're a less famous guy in New York, and then you're a more famous guy
yes.
in New York. But you stayed in the same place.
Oh, yes.
Let's just keep the environment the same and let the social environment change.
And, I've also had the two names that I'll get when they don't know my name. I'll get Gary Shandling a lot.
Shandling.
They'll go, you're Gary Shandling. And the other one that I love that I get is Arthur Godfrey, who was like an old radio personality in
yeah.
like the 50s, who was best known for being like extremely anti-Semitic. He was never a great performer. Never, his show was never anything amazing, but he hated the Jews. And that's his legacy.
And they think, how old would he be at this point? You'd still get
he'd pretty much be 1,000, I think. Yeah.
People must think he held up well when they see it. No kidding. Hating the Jews keeps you young.
Yes.
Knew there was something to it.
Yeah. If Hitler were alive today, he'd be out jogging. He hated the Jews. And it keeps you healthy. Who are some famous Jew haters? I mean, Mel Gibson's too easy.
Oh, yeah. But you know which one I like is Hergé. You know, Hergé, he wrote the Tintin comics.
Oh, yeah?
And he was a Belgian cartoonist. And I grew up, my mom is from Glasgow.
Yeah.
And I grew up loving these Tintin comics. We come from a small Jewish-Scottish community. So in Scotland and all of Europe, you know, these Tintin comics are huge. So these were like the comic books of my childhood. I'd spend summers in Scotland and my uncle would bring them over. And I got really attached to Tintin. And then Steven Spielberg made that Tintin movie and all these things came out about Hergé. And the New York Times, they had this whole article about what a rabid anti-Semite. And how he gave a ton of money to the Nazi party to encourage them, hurry up and come over to Belgium already. What are you waiting for?
Oh, wow.
So he was, you know, in Belgium, there was quite a split about, do we want Nazi occupation? And he was out there basically with a megaphone saying, come on, people, we need to bring the Nazis. And I thought, how great is it that Spielberg, a Jew, is
yes,
making the Tintin
course.
Movie? And it all kind of comes around like that. It's kind of like Disney and... you know, how Jews wound up running Disney after...
That is an amazing one. Yeah, like the Jews. I think had the Third Reich lasted, Jews would eventually been owning and operating the Third Reich.
Yeah.
They'd be manufacturing, making a profit off the uniforms.
Did you see the story that the KKK has now opened up membership to Jews?
I... I got to join just so I can have a membership card.
I'll join if they have health care.
Yeah.
And if they don't, the Jews will add it.
They really are opening up to Jews?
Yeah. This is a story I saw this week on the internet.
Yeah. I'm joining. Because just to be able to open up my wallet and go, okay, let's see. Here's my American Express frequent flyer card. And, that's my Ku Klux Klan membership.
And the person looks at it and goes, oh, they let Jews in?
Yeah.
I had a funny visual come to mind of just a Jew in a tallis with holes punctured in it.
Oh, yeah.
Just trying to resource some of the sheets lying around the house.
See, but in a way, it also feels kind of sad that, like, times are changing. Like, you want the Klan to hate the Jews. If the Klan doesn't hate the Jews, who does?
And that's everyone the scary else. Question, yeah. Yeah. Who's going to step in and say, hey, now that the Klan's, you know, back down on the Jew thing, yeah, we're gonna take over with fresh new energy.
Oh, yeah. It's so funny. Nowadays, the only people who like the Jews are the KKK. I heard that, well, Errol Flynn, the old movie star, romantic movie star, really hated the Jews. Oh, also, I heard the guy who wrote the Willy Wonka, what was his name? Whatever. But he hated the Jews.
Roald Dahl, not a Jew.
No
lover.
No, he hated the Jews. Most of the old-time great writers hated the Jews.
Mark Twain loved the Jews.
Oh yeah.
Mark Twain has some really nice Jew writings.
He was. Mark Twain, when you talk about him nowadays, people go, he had some great Jew writing. He was one of those. He had loads of Jew writing.
Some of them on the walls.
Yes. Oscar Wilde didn't like the Jews.
Really?
Nah, he didn't like the Jews.
You know, that one pisses me off a little more because he was a subject of prejudice.
Yes.
My uncle in Cambridge, England, is a transvestite, I guess.
Yeah.
He calls himself a tranny, but I found out that's now an offensive term in America. I don't know about if it's become offensive there yet.
I've heard it in America, but then I've heard a lot of terms in America.
Tranny's just become offensive. Yeah. I don't know if you got the memo.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track anymore.
But my uncle's a self-proclaimed tranny, and he has a weekly, what they call the weekly tranny meeting that Kylie, my girlfriend, and I have both been to, and it's a bunch of transgender and cross-dressers on a boat on the Thames River in Cambridge, and it's very nice. There's tea, there's whiskey, and they get together, and it's a civilized British tranny meeting. And
I see, now that would scare me on land. But being stuck in the middle of the ocean.
It's a docked ship. They don't go anywhere. You don't actually take off. It's just to get the feeling of the water moving the floor a little bit.
See, that seems like it makes no sense. Why would you be on a boat that's docked?
It's a nice boat. You ever see, like, rappers, they're always on a boat and they got a bottle of...
Oh, yes, yeah.
Well, they're not quite as cool, the trannies in Cambridge. They don't take the boat out. They just let it moor, right? But so at the tranny meeting, one of the members of my uncle's group is an Indian lady, in quotes.
Yeah.
You know, from India. Where they have extreme prejudice.
I still think, when I hear the term Indian, that she's like, you know, hopping on one foot going, whoa, 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 whoa,
whoa, whoa, you know. You might want to work on that.
Yes, yes. and sending messages through smoke signals.
Well, the reason I say from India is, and she came from India. She's not born second generation Indian.
Yes, yeah. Worst class system and the strongest class system in the world. I mean, I heard in India, if you're born in the lower class, that's it. You're stuck there.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah,
just the way you said it that made me laugh. Yeah,
but in the next 20 billion years, your generation will be in that. There's no way to dig your way out.
You can go down easily, but it's hard to go up.
Yes. Yeah, so, and I heard in India, you could go down easily. Yeah, that's one thing the Indians are known for. You could go down. Which is why I like to vacation in India, because they go down easily. Some people like to go to Thailand. Like me, I travel to India because they go down easily.
They don't go down as easily, those Thais.
I only date girls from India.
The Thais have a hard time going down. Very unsettling.
I put out ads in the singles papers looking for Indian girl. See, now that would scare me too. If it's an Indian transvestite,
yeah,
I wouldn't want them to go down easily.
They don't want them to go. Well, they do have a tough time there.
Yeah.
You know, a large portion of my listenership are Indian transvestites.
Yes.
And I feel like we're alienating
them.
Those
are the only fans I have are Indian transvestites.
Oh, man. But it's a, you drop in the caste system real quick.
If you
go transvestite in India, it's not...
You don't go back. I think John Wayne had Indians go down on him, but that was all. And while they were going down on him, he'd go, "Hey, pilgrim."
He was a real American.
Yes.
The point of this story is it's not easy to be a transgender in India. They give him a real hard time. So she leaves and she comes to Cambridge and I'm on the boat.
First person she saw when she got off the boat, John Wayne. Wearing a big white cowboy hat.
And he tipped it ever so slightly.
Hey there, Pocahontas.
Now, normally she would have been offended for being confused for the wrong kind of Indian, but not with John Wayne. It was his good American charm. He says, "I hear you go down easy."
Eventually, he did learn, and then he would greet them getting off the boat going, "Hey there, Gandhi."
I hear you go down easy. End of the story is that she was an anti-Semite, okay? I thought that man lady from India was an anti-Semite. The point is lost. It doesn't matter. All right. Well, this seems like as good a time as any to start into this philosophy.
Okay.
Well, we talked a little bit. Alex speculated that you're a guy with anxiety. Alex is the guy who picks the philosophers.
Yes.
Is that an accurate?
Yeah, I'll go along with it.
It seemed like, at least when we were talking about socks.
Kind of like the anxiety that any Indian transvestite feels when John Wayne shows up at their house.
Ah, shit. All right, let me try this again.
Okay.
Anxiety. Let's talk yes. about anxiety. Let's talk about it.
As anyone in India knows about, whenever a Western comes on.
Grandpa used to have a lot of Indians coming in this house. Never knew what they were doing back then. Turns out they go down easy. It's been a legacy in the Wayne family ever since. Hell, my pa had Indians. I have Indians. My kids have Indians. You got a kid now, right?
Yeah, two.
Two kids or the
yeah,
kid
I
is two?
I picked them up in a schoolyard somewhere.
You have a two-year-old kid?
I told them I was looking for a puppy.
Yeah. Is the kid two or do you have two kids?
I have two kids.
Really?
Two kids.
I remember when you first had a kid, I remember seeing you walking in Gramercy Park with the stroller. I was like...
Yeah. What's wrong with this picture?
Just I didn't know you'd had a kid. And then I did think you picked it up in a...
Yeah, it doesn't go together. It doesn't go together like, say, an Indian transvestite and John Wayne's dick.
Yeah. Go So you started late in life having kids.
Yes.
Is it tough being a dad at your age?
At any age. And at my age, I just... I don't know anymore. Yeah.
Do you regret not having them sooner, or are you happy to have them?
I don't know. I have no real thoughts.
No.
So this philosopher said what?
All right. The guy he picked out for you.
Life is death, and death is life. And they all say shit like that.
About life and death?
Yeah, they all say stuff that doesn't make sense. And you go, well, he's a philosopher. That must make a lot of sense.
He sounded like Jackie Mason. Well, he's a philosopher.
He's a person like this. He's a very knowledgeable person.
If a guy's a philosopher, so who cares if it makes any sense or not? If a guy says it's alive or if he's dead, then who cares?
Okay, what does philosopher say?
The guy's name is... Serene Rap. Kierkegaard. Have you heard of him?
Oh, Kierkegaard, I've heard of.
You've heard of him?
Yes. I don't know.
Is that
anything
how you say Kierkegaard?
Written, Kierkegaard? But I've heard of Kierkegaard.
In his book, The Concept of Dread, Kierkegaard describes a certain type of anxiety. When a man stands over a ledge, he is afraid. This is actually pretty good for you because this is kind of what you were talking about with the bus. When a man stands over a ledge, he's afraid of the potential fall, but also has this strange urge to jump.
Yes.
That does sound like what you were describing
earlier.
Yeah,
I've been compared to Kierkegaard several times.
It's one of the great comparisons.
Yeah.
He knows the difference between jumping and not jumping in his decision, and both are real options. The feeling of dread associated with this choice, Kierkegaard calls the dizziness of freedom. The dizziness of freedom. Basically, I guess having freedom to do whatever you want is what causes the anxiety.
You know what I always think whenever I hear of anybody jumping off a bridge or the roof of a building?
Don't do it!
Yeah, that's
what... Son of a bitch.
Because I'm a brilliant philosopher that way. I go, you know, I don't think it makes too much sense. I think you could get hurt. So what did the other philosophers say?
No, it's just Kierkegaard. That's the guy we're going to talk about.
Okay.
Let's talk for real for a minute about anxiety. Do you suffer from anxiety?
Yes. And premature ejaculation. Does he talk about it there?
Yeah, it's the next paragraph.
If Kierkegaard
it's right here. It says, Alex says, I picked Kierkegaard for Gilbert because I believe that he suffers from anxiety and premature ejaculation.
Yes.
Which is the two things that Kierkegaard
taught. Henry Ford hated the Jews.
Henry Ford, huge Jew hater.
Yeah, major Jew hater. And Charles Lindbergh hated the Jews.
You know what's interesting about Ford hating the Jews? Most Jews won't buy German cars, but they'll buy a Ford.
Oh, yes.
The anti-Semitism's right here. You don't even have to go to Germany to not buy a car.
See?
Yeah. I wonder if there's any car manufacturers that love Jews.
Morty's cars.
Morty's. Yes. Yeah, that was from Coney Island, right?
Yes, Morty's car. Yes, Morty's Cars Emporium.
Did you grow up, when you're in Coney Island, did your family raise you with any religious Judaism?
No, nothing at all religious.
A lot of Hasidim there, right?
No, I didn't remember a Hasidim.
No?
I remember a guy selling chickpeas out of a stand.
That has nothing to do with this, though.
Yes.
Just a memorable guy.
Yes, and singing Italian songs. Do you want to change the world? Have you? Oh, that Chicago song.
Oh, that's not Italian.
Saturday in the park.
Chickpeas out of a stand, is that real or was that?
Yeah, no, it was real from my childhood. There was a guy selling chickpeas out of a stand.
Did you try them?
Yes, they were good.
not out of a can or anything, just loose chickpeas.
No, but speaking of in the can, sometimes when John Wayne would be with an Indian transvestite.
Well, let's talk about a situation like you had that Twitter trouble a few years ago.
Yes.
So when you deal with a situation like that, because I know I can't deal with these kind of things. Whenever shit goes wrong, that's when I get very anxious. You know, a little bit of somebody like all of a sudden misunderstanding me, especially as a comic. I've had, you know. You go on a show and then you start getting hate from people. And
especially with Twitter, it's like you could go on there and say, oh, I ate an apple today. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get hate tweets and hate email, like people wishing you dead, like no matter what you say.
When that went down, how'd you... To go down easy like an Indian.
The Twitter went down on John Wayne, interestingly enough. The entire internet went down on... when the internet was being invented by what's-his-name, whatever, he said, this will be a new way of going down on John Wayne. And he would stand there... with his white hat and his pants around his ankles going, hey, wanna go down on my Twitter handle?
but I want to know for real, how did you handle it?
Oh, that was pretty crazy. Because I feel like the internet is like the new way of ringing someone's doorbell and running away. Mm-hmm. It's like everyone's like safe. And so you could do that. You could ring a doorbell and run away. You could call someone and hang up.
Yeah.
Scream out a curse word and hang up.
Yeah.
And I remember for like about 3 days, it was nothing but hate and people wishing I was dead and everything. And then after a while, you find out, like, the general public doesn't give a fuck. Yeah. You know, it's like...
they just jump on board. It's like, who are we hating this week? Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Bill Cosby. We're too much rape. Who are we hating this week?
Yeah.
Woody Allen.
yes.
you know, whoever it is, and then they'll jump on to the next thing. Oh, who are we hating this week? Oh, we got Gilbert back here. We don't like the tweet. We don't.
Yeah.
Or if it's Daniel Tosh or whoever the hell it is.
Oh, yeah. It's a new person.
3 weeks ago was Artie Lang. Oh,
yeah.
And that was also Twitter.
Yeah, okay, you know. We hated him. Who do we hate now?
I think that's what everybody's looking for.
I feel like the internet makes me sentimental for old-time lynch mobs. Because lynch mobs actually had to get their
they
hands
showed
dirty.
Up.
Yeah, they had to go outside, mm-hmm. get their hands dirty, deal with other people. Now it's all done in your living room.
The torch and the,
oh,
and
yes.
the pickaxe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, kill
the pitchfork,
kill the Frankenstein monster. That's when those movies where it took place in Germany, but everyone had an English accent.
So when you have like 3 days and you have all this hate coming at you from everywhere, are you able to not internalize it or?
No, almost impossible, you know, because it's like I'm one of those people who... like to put on a cowboy hat.
Take a deep breath. Listen.
Okay. Oh, if I get like 5,000 great reviews mm-hmm. and one person says he sucks, that's the one I listen to.
Really?
Yeah.
So you have that very strong negative voice that's kind of waiting for you, luring you in.
Oh yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. and especially and on. But you know, the whole tsunami thing worked out well because Affleck fired me, got loads of free press out of it, and then hired a guy to imitate my voice for less money, thus bringing closure to a horrible tragedy.
right. Yeah, I thought pretty much that was just any excuse. Let's...
Yeah, I think
it's all
like,
nonsense.
Yeah, yeah. It's like one of these things like... They'll go, okay, there's a part, I always use this reference, no one knows what the fuck I'm talking about.
Okay.
But did you ever see Casablanca?
Yeah.
I don't mean the movie, the country. But anyway, no, Casablanca, is it a country or a city? Or
I think it's a city in Morocco.
City, yeah. Yeah. In that movie, there's... the French chief of police, and he decides to close down this casino. And they say, why are you closing it? And he goes, I'm shocked to find gambling going on. And that's what I feel it was like,
yeah.
Kind of like convenient shock and outrage.
You know, it's funny. It's all those people in the public that have that hate. And where that hate is actually coming from, and where does it go as soon as the story's done?
Oh, yes.
It has nothing to do with you at all.
Yeah, we have to find a new person.
Yeah.
A new enemy.
But you internalize it, you're saying, basically, when people... because you've had so much good things happen for
yes.
you, and so many, you know, sort of pats on the back from comedy and stuff, but there's still that strong negative
force. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's just like... if I do a show and it turns out great, I'm the greatest thing on the planet. And then if I do a show that I don't think went as well, then I go, I'm shit. Now they're starting to find out I don't belong in the business.
It's that feeling of being a fraud.
Yeah, yeah.
Like yeah.
Any day now, they're going to come look at the guest list and say, oh, you're not on here. I heard Mel Brooks, when he was like writing for Sid Caesar, and it was like the biggest gig you could get. He would call his parents up, and his mother would say to him, so, you're still there? They didn't find out? You're still there? They're still hiring?
And that sounds like my parents.
Yeah.
That's a Jewish, just keep you anxious. That is the anxiety. That's just, I think that comes from being a Jew.
Yes.
You know, there is that constant fear. You know, and we're talking about all these Jew haters. There is always this constant fear that, you know, as a Jew, they're going to find you out and you're going to be done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That'll be it. Any second.
Yeah. I wonder if it was like that for people before the Holocaust. You know?
Well, they've always hated the Jews. Like, I mean, it was like there was the Inquisition,
right,
and Olies, the pogroms.
But those were like regional hate, feel like. The Holocaust, because of the time, also spread everywhere.
Yes.
So if you weren't a Jew in Spain and you were a Jew maybe in Germany during that time, you might not have that kind of anxiety living there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, well, yeah Jews in Spain are annoying, sure.
Yeah.
No, we're okay. People like us, all right. You know, but I think once the Holocaust happened, it sort of it spread to Jews everywhere. You know?
And now there was that thing recently where some, like a union of all the Spanish actors, spoke out against the Jews, like that Javier Bardem or whatever that guy's name is from
Javier Bardem.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And what's her name? Maybe
Penelope.
Penelope Cruz. Yeah,
I saw the P forming on your lips. All right. So what? They came out against Jews.
Yes.
Now?
Yeah. Yeah. That was
unbelievable. And that the point of that whole Indian transvestite story, I couldn't believe that she was against Jews.
Yes.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Here's somebody who's like the most persecuted person. That she had to leave her country. You know. And she even was like, okay, put that all aside. I hate Jews, by the way.
Well, I heard there was even anti-Semitism within concentration camps, where if it was like some Polish or someone who wasn't a Jew, but for some other reason, either homosexuality or just anti-Hitler, they hated the Jews.
Really?
And they would blame the Jews for this.
Yeah, but that's kind of an easy one, you know.
Yes.
You're surrounded by a bunch of Jews in a death camp. You go, you know what? They might not have just come for me.
Yeah.
Once they were already killing all of you.
Yes.
They threw in a few gays.
Yeah.
So you survived the Twitter thing okay. You had a few days of hating yourself because you believed all the nonsense. And then you're okay. And then it's all gone. Right?
You know what? It's like, you know, my stutter's coming back. No. It's funny. When Richard Nixon was in office, there were all the protests going on. And like the protesters, it was also like dropping acid and burning down colleges. And they started talking about the moral majority. Like, these are just a few, like, crazy drug takers, and there's the moral majority. And I like to think that there's the majority of people that actually have a brain in their head, and it's just the other ones are louder.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's true, too. Somebody once started some stuff with me on the internet, and I was talking to somebody. I said, this is kind of stupid to engage in, and people are believing this person. I said, what do I do? You know, they said, well, the question is, can you be louder than him?
Oh,
that's really what he said.
Yeah.
I said, I don't know. I'm not really a screaming guy. He goes, well, then just wait for it to die down.
Yeah.
He said, the only way to win is to be louder. So it's, you know, as you said, it's the loudness. It's idiots are always the loudest.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right. You never get really intellectual loud people.
And it's like, if you were to say something, say whatever, about the Ebola virus, you'd have all these people, ooh, I feel so good about myself because I hate this guy because he said something bad taste.
Right.
About, and people pat themselves on the back because they're outraged and offended. And I feel like, okay, if you really feel that strongly, are you helping out in an Ebola clinic?
Right.
Are you actually doing volunteer work?
How many of those people complaining about your tsunami joke were actually sending aid?
Yeah. Are they? You could actually get on a plane, go to Japan, and help out with the relief effort.
In a strange way, you raised probably more awareness.
Oh, yeah.
For the tsunami, which probably did wind up leading to aid.
Yes.
Oddly enough, you probably helped more than you hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine how you even did hurt, but I mean, You definitely got people thinking about it and talking about it, and that's, I think, the point of comedy anyway, is, you know.
George Carlin said it's the duty of a comedian to find out where the line is drawn and deliberately step over it.
Right. That is the point. And that's the funny thing about, like, people complaining about comics going over the line. Well, if we don't go over the line, there's no funny.
Yeah.
I feel like Pat Cooper. There's no funny.
Funny. And it's John Wayne. Who is he? God?
You want to be funny? You want to be funny? All right, let's go back to our guy here, Kierkegaard. So how do you know Kierkegaard? How did you?
He lived next door to me.
Nice guy?
Yes, and occasionally he'd wear a cowboy hat.
Well, how are you familiar with him, for real?
Just hearing the name, and I knew he was a philosopher. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of one of those things where if you ask me what anything he said or what he wrote, I couldn't tell you.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about him.
Yeah.
He was born May 5th, 1813.
I knew that.
You knew that.
Yeah.
And he lived to November 11th, 1855.
Yes, I knew that too.
And he was a Danish philosopher, theologian, poet, social critic.
And by Danish, he tasted good with coffee.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. And a religious author who's widely considered to be the first existentialist philosopher. That's interesting. The first well, that's probably why he's famous.
I guess. And I can name one other philosopher, Camus.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I talked about him with Larry Miller.
Also, I wouldn't know what he said, but I know he was a philosopher.
Yeah, I bet you know more than that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he wrote The Myth of Sisyphus, I think.
You ever read it?
No.
Pretty good. It's a quick read. Kierkegaard wrote critical texts on organized religion, Christendom. I guess that has to do with Christianity. I've never heard of the term Christendom. Christendom.
Ah.
Morality, ethics, psychology, and philosophy of religion, displaying a fondness for metaphor, irony, and parables. Much of his work deals with issues on how one lives as a, quote, single individual, giving priority to concrete human reality over abstract thinking and highlighting the importance of personal choice and commitment. He was a fierce critic of idealist intellectuals and philosophers of his time. He was born into an affluent family in Copenhagen, and his mother, Anne Sørensdatter, I don't know, Lude Kierkegaard, had served as a maid in the household before marrying his father. So his father, he's the product of a guy banging the maid.
Ah!
That's
more interesting.
That is more interesting. I wonder how many philosophers came out of that kind of relationship. Yeah, she was an unassuming figure, quiet, plain, not formally educated. She just mostly went around the house and did maid stuff.
Yes.
Kept the house very tidy, it says.
Vacuumed.
His father was a very stern man, to all appearances dry. And prosaic, what's prosaic mean? You know that word?
Yeah, but if you don't know it, you're stupid.
You're on your own, kid. I don't know what prosaic means, but I'm guessing not the life of a party type of guy.
I'll go with that.
Yeah, I like this. I like how poetic they get with it. Under his rustic cloak demeanor.
Ah, that's a good one.
He concealed an active imagination. He concealed it like a weapon.
I want to have a rustic cloak demeanor one day.
Yeah, people have said that to me about when I said I was coming to interview.
He's quite the rustic cloak demeanor, that guy.
They said, but he conceals quite an active imagination.
Yes.
I think it's just mostly interesting that he's a kid of a relationship between a guy and who started banging the maid.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, usually these philosophers, from reading about them, they often come from, you know, lots of they come from wealth, and I guess he does too, but you know, they come from these esteemed families, and I guess that's how you could become a philosopher, because you didn't really have to do anything.
Oh yeah, you sit around and think all day.
You got to have money for that. Otherwise, you're not going to get anything written and published, you know. There's a lot of philosophers with no money. You just don't hear about them. They're on park benches and stuff. All right, so here's a paragraph written by Kierkegaard on anxiety.
So Kierkegaard said, when I'm going down on John Wayne, I feel a lot of anxiety. Kierkegaard.
How do you manage anxiety in your life? Do you do anything
not
for
well.
It? No?
No, but it. You know what's scary about it? Whenever I have anxiety or I'm depressed, and when people say to me, like, hey, you know, like, it's not like you were hit by a truck or anything, and I always go, well, but being depressed now, you know, thinking about it doesn't mean I'm not going to get hit by a truck.
Especially if you get lost in it.
Yes,
walking
yes.
around New York, your
yeah,
chances
you
are much higher.
You can still get hit. It's not like you have the choice. It's not like, hey, I'm one of those depressed guys, so I'll never get hit by a truck.
You think anxiety and depression are pretty much the same thing?
I have no idea. I guess they're very close.
Yeah.
They're dating.
They're close.
Yeah, they're very close. They're very intimate.
I think I really think anxiety comes from I think you have to have a pretty good imagination, first of all, for anxiety. I think it's basically like when he was talking about being on that roof, right? Being on a ledge and being afraid to fall. You have to imagine falling. It's all imaginative, you know?
There's some stupid people that I'll meet that I really envy. Because it seems like they can't think that far.
Right.
They get worried about stuff.
I always love these people when you say, hey, what do you think of this? And they go, I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
Like, they just can't.
Yeah.
Their imagination isn't capable of it.
Yeah.
Oh, really? You can't imagine? No, yeah. I've tried. I just I can't imagine it. It's such a stupid term.
And whenever I think, like if I'm depressed or I have anxiety, and I'll think, oh, well, yeah, there are people without arms and legs. And that'll just make me feel guilty on top of my depression. I'll still have the depression, but now I'll feel guilty.
You go for limbless. Limbless is the way to...
Yeah.
Because there are many horrible things people have, but you go limbless.
Now, limbless is, that's when you go, there once was a man from Nantucket.
Yes, that's it.
That's a limitless. Yes.
I think you have to have an overactive imagination to be anxious.
Or bladder.
You know? Right.
You have to have an overactive bladder.
That'll make you anxious,
yes.
too. But I think you're right. I think it's people who are simple.
Yes.
Don't get anxious.
Yeah.
You know, they're not worried about anything. You have to worry.
Yeah.
Part of like we were talking about, the Jewish thing. And I wanted to ask you, do you think you identify as a Jew more through worry?
I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily a Jewish thing.
But I think like a lot of people, and I identify themselves as a Jew based on the fact that, oh, it's kind of scary to be a Jew.
Oh,
like,
yes.
People hate Jews.
Yes.
And that's really what being a Jew means to them.
Yes.
Is that where you're at?
That they have to make a run for it at any point.
Where are you at with identifying as a Jew?
I once heard the term from an older comic, a boxcar Jew, and that's what I feel like I am. It means like, even though I'm not really aware of when the holidays are, I was never bar mitzvahed. I never hardly ever went to a synagogue except during a funeral or something. But you know, if they start rounding up the Jews again, you're going to be thrown in with all of them.
That is it.
That's it.
It's like, oh, I'm a Jew, you know, because they're going to kill us all, and I'm going to be one of them.
Yes. No matter what you do, no matter how you say, well, I don't really believe in the Jewish religion, and I'm against what the Zionists are doing. You're still going to be gassed with all the other Jews.
In a weird way, it's the hating of the Jews that can bond the Jews together.
Oh, yes. You
know? I wonder if people didn't hate us, if that would be it.
Yeah,
that,
then there'd be no Jews anymore, I think.
It's the hating that keeps us going.
Yes.
You know? That's it's kind of sad, too, though. It's kind of, I feel like, I wonder what it would feel like for you or for people who identify as a Jew because of that, if there wasn't that element. Like, where would that leave you?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It's scary.
But do you think you'd look into to more stuff about you? Well, first of all, do you believe in God?
No, I never really, except, of course, if I die and then he does exist, in which case I'll say, I was kidding.
But you've never had that kind of...
No.
So holidays and all that is more traditional anyway.
Yeah, and I think that's the way it is to most people.
Mm-hmm. Have you been to Israel?
No.
No?
No, and I'd be scared to go.
No desire?
No, I hate... I'll probably be there if there's some comedy club that I get booked there, you know. The Tel Aviv Titter Room or something.
that's interesting, though. The idea that it's kind of like the fear of death that binds us, you know?
Oh, yes.
It's like no matter how much you try to distance yourself from Judaism, the guy... who's going to keep you in it is the guy who hates you the most.
Oh,
it's
yes.
Like Hitler.
Yes. So, in other words, what we've learned today is God bless Hitler for keeping the Jews together. See, he did do something good.
And it kept him young. Kept him young. All right, here's a little paragraph on anxiety by our guy, Kierkegaard. Anxiety may be compared with dizziness. As he was talking about before, that dizziness of freedom.
Yes.
He whose eye happens to look down, the yawning abyss becomes dizzy. But what is the reason for this? Is it just as much in his own eye as in the abyss? For suppose he had not looked down. So he's saying you can blame your own eye as much as you can blame the fall. Because it's up to you to have looked there.
Yeah.
And I think that's the imagination thing. Like, you could choose not to imagine the bad shit, and then, you know, it's up to you if you want to be afraid or not. Hence, anxiety is the dizziness.
I think Kierkegaard said you could choose not to imagine the bad shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what he's saying, though? He says, hence, anxiety is the dizziness of freedom which emerges when the spirit wants to posit the synthesis and freedom looks down into its own possibility, laying hold of finiteness to support
itself.
And
this is why you shouldn't read anything by Kierkegaard. He doesn't make any fucking sense.
I don't get it. Freedom succumbs to dizziness.
I've always said that.
You've always said that? Further than this, psychology cannot and will not go. I like that he's limiting psychology. He says it cannot and will not go there.
It won't go.
That's kind of arrogant.
Yeah, it's like a guess that won't
win. That's, you know, don't even question this. Psychology can't go further.
Yeah.
And it will not go further.
Yeah, because you'll say to it, all right, it's getting late now. I'm not going.
Who's he to dictate how far psychology can go? In that very moment, everything is changed in freedom. When it again rises, sees that it is guilty. Between these two moments lies the leap, which no science has explained and which no science can explain. He who becomes guilty in anxiety becomes as ambiguously guilty as it is possible to become. I'm not 100% sure what he's saying there.
No.
But I think he's saying you're responsible for your own anxiety.
He's a philosopher. He must know what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's a philosopher. He's a philosopher.
All of a sudden, this guy's a philosopher. He knows more than this person.
It's because of Jackie that I named the show what I did, because when Carlin died, he called me up. And the funny thing is I used to hang
out. Carlin called you after he died? That's very odd.
He was good like that. He always crossed the line.
He was punctual.
Jackie, when I used to hang out with Jackie quite a bit. Do you know him?
Not well. No, I've run into him.
He introduced me to Carlin, and he used to, anytime I say, oh, I love George, what are you, George Carlin? He's gotten so filthy, he's not even funny anymore. You make such a big deal out of George Carlin. And the day he died, Jackie calls me up the day Carlin died and goes, you know, he was the greatest comedian we had of our time. He was a modern day philosopher, and that's where I came up with the name for the show. I guess what Kierkegaard is saying is that you're responsible for your own anxiety.
Yeah.
It's up to you. You want to be afraid. You want to look. He's basically saying your eye is just as guilty as the drop, if you go to the ledge.
Yeah.
So it's up to you. You want to be afraid? Be afraid. It's kind of a tough attitude.
Which
really
sounds like a bullshit attitude. You know? Yeah. Hey, you got a headache? Don't have a headache anymore. Your foot hurts? Tell your foot not to hurt.
You want to be afraid? That's your business.
Yeah, go ahead. Be afraid.
That is the John Wayne there. Hey, you want to be afraid, Pilgrim?
Be afraid of my dick there, Gandhi.
Oh, man. All right, well, here, I got three quotes. I always ask the guests to read them. We'll discuss them one at a time. So will you do the honors here?
To dare is to lose one's footing momentarily. Not to dare is to lose oneself. I guess you take a chance and stuff could happen. And if you don't take a chance, nothing happens.
Yeah, he's saying if you don't try, you're not even going to be yourself. You know, you might stumble a little bit if you try, but if you don't take the leap and try and do something, then who are you? You haven't even done anything.
Who the fuck are you?
it's like if you're one of these guys who
in fact, he even says, if you don't dare, who the fuck are you?
He's a real tough guy.
Yeah, life offers sufficient phenomena in which the individual, in anxiety, gazes almost deliriously at guilt and yet fears it. Guilt has an eye for the spirit of the fascinating power of the serpent's glance. I think he was just stoned, and then I think he hit his head on the bathroom, on the medicine cabinet door. This all sounds like stuff you could get off when you're adding up your Chinese food bill.
Let me take a look at this one again. Life offers sufficient phenomena with the individual in anxiety, gazes upon deliriously the guilt, and yet fears it. Guilt has for the eye of the spirit a fascinating power of a serpent's glance. Yeah, the second part of that makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
It's that seductive power of guilt. Like when you were talking about the limbless person.
Yes.
You know, you can guilt yourself, and it's got a seductive quality, right?
It does.
But it is really just the serpent's glance. It's there for a minute, and then you get a taco or something.
Exactly.
All right, let's take this last quote here.
Without risk, faith is an impossibility. So it's basically like the first one. It's you got to try something to accomplish something.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when John Wayne first went over to an Indian transvestite.
I hear you go down easy. He took a risk.
And it paid off.
Yeah, but you can't have faith in anything unless you take a leap of faith. That's the risk, is the leap, right?
Yes.
I don't know what he's really saying here.
No,
that it's,
he's full of shit. In other words, to close, fuck Kierkegaard. He was a stupid douchebag. Anyone who reads Kierkegaard is a pretentious asshole.
Gilbert, it's been fun having you on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing it.
And my Twitter account is @RealGilbert. You could hear my podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. You could subscribe to it on iTunes and SideshowNetwork.tv and hear it on GilbertGottfried.com.
Have you aired the Monsters Kids yet?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a special Monsters Kids episode.
Monsters Kids episode. All right, Gilbert, I love you. Thanks for having me
here. Thank you.
All right.
I love you, but not in an John Wayne Indian transvestite type.
Well, you got to work up to that, I think. Folks, there it is. It's Modern Day Philosopher Season 5 completed and in your pocket of your iPhone. Take it home. Take it home. Please, please enjoy it. Enjoy it. Go to the website, moderndayphilosophers.net. Check out more from Gilbert Gottfried on his amazing Colossal podcast. He's a good man. He's a good guy. And I enjoyed having him on the show quite a bit. That's it. Make a donation, moderndayphilosophers.net. Write me at thecomicalyahoo.com. Go on iTunes, leave us a nice rating. 5 stars and a nice review will help us in ways you can't even imagine. Get it? Go to connectpal.com/moderndayphilosophers. Get season 1. Go check out the exclusive video from Alex Fossella, who you'll be hearing more from next week on the wrap-up show. And we've got an insanely awesome lineup for season 6 coming your way. Can't wait for you to hear it. Thanks, everybody, and have a wonderful week.